welcome to the Yatropexy Podcast. I'm your host, Marie Gottmarack, and I'm joined by...
Michael from Whitehorse.
And Corey, right here in Edmonton.
Yes, and today we are going to review the 1991 film, The Doctor. Okay, so... I know how I got involved with this film, because in first year medicine, they made us watch it within like the first 3 weeks to imbue a sense of, what's it?
Humility.
Yeah, I suppose humility. Also, I think empathy. Empathy was kind of what they were going for with that whole thing there. To get us while we're young, as it were. And then I think the two of you came to know this film because I told you to watch it as we were going to do a podcast on it.
Told is the polite way. I recall like several hours of browbeating into watching this with you.
It took me 2 years to get you to watch this film with me.
And it took nearly that long for me to finally get around to seeing it.
Yes. There's some brinkmanship about other podcasts, but that's all in the past. Okay, so a brief overview of the plot of this film, because it's not really that difficult.
Yes, it's about a Time Lord.
Yeah.
He has a magical blue box.
Different doctor, guys. Different doctor. Okay, so this stars William Hurt as the cardiac surgeon Jack McKee, which is the most cardiac surgeon name I can possibly think of, who's kind of a hotshot working in a large urban hospital, but seems to be also an academic center, and it describes how the main character contracts, spoilers, laryngeal cancer, and then has to become the thing that all doctors fear being, a patient. And he learns, going through the system, how dehumanizing the experience can be, and he ends up being a better person on the end. There's also a weird bit of kind of romance with another character, which we'll talk about later. But overall, this is the plot of the film.
It's a very aspirational, feel-good 90s drama.
It is the kind of movie you only saw in the 90s.
Yeah.
You don't really see these kind of dramas anymore, especially these sorts of medical dramas.
There's probably a reason for that, but we can get into that in a bit.
Yeah. First, I kind of want to talk about how realistic we think this movie is. First, the set is actually obviously an actual hospital, and they used a pretty nice one. And in terms of how people interact and how you see all the different groups within the healthcare team, mainly it's administrators, nurses, and doctors. That all seems pretty much how it is to me as a third-year medical student, more or less. Although it's always possible that the surgeons have simply not shown me the parts where they dance around through the OR halls, but, you know, I'd believe it could be possible that they do that.
Yeah, there are a lot of jokester doctors in this movie.
And, in reality, there can be quite a lot of jokester doctors all over the place.
Yeah, I can't really comment on the realistic side of the medical aspect of it, but one thing that kind of surprised me a few times is there were scenes where they're in waiting rooms, and I mean, some of the waiting room scenes, they're full of people, but there's a lot of waiting rooms where they're almost empty, and that struck me as weird, because most waiting rooms I've been to, it's not just you and the one other person you're talking to, there's usually a couple people there at least.
90s decor, 90s phones.
90s hair, 90s fashion.
There's a car phone! Oh my god!
Remember those? Holy shit, we're old. We can say we remember car phones.
What about speaking to... I mean, we're all fairly healthy young people, so I don't think we've had too much interaction with healthcare systems yet. But in terms of the times you've visited, has it been at all like when you've been visiting?
I can think of one time where I'd say yes, where it's very dehumanizing, where it's like you're looked at, poked and prodded, and then they leave without really talking to you.
What kind of specialist were you visiting?
I was visiting a sports clinic, actually. So this was just because I was having some minor pain that they wanted to address. This wasn't even like a life-threatening issue.
You expect them to be more dehumanizing than life-threatening issues?
No, I just, I would think that if there's no huge press, if it's not like an end-of-the-world apocalyptic situation, that bedside manner would be something they would actually have time for.
What about you, Michael?
Well, most of my extended stays in the hospital were when I was a kid. So, you know, doctors and nurses tend to treat children fairly well.
Yeah. But it's funny because, I mean, in first year medicine, it's really easy to say, well, clearly I'll have bedside manner, be nice to people all the time. But as I go through third year, there is this thing that happens, and there's lots of discussion on this in healthcare community about why this thing happens, where you sort of stop thinking about people as people and you sort of stop remembering to be polite. And I think I even do that sometimes when I come home, like just talking a normal conversation. I forget that there's like a certain way that people are supposed to behave towards each other, and it just sort of dropped out of my certain thing that I remember to do. Would you say that's true, Corey?
I think some truth in that, yeah.
Yeah. I like to think in the past couple of months I've gotten a little bit better about that because I became slightly paranoid about what a horrible person I was becoming.
As you said, I think in the last couple of months you've made a conscious effort to not be like that, so that's definitely helped.
But a lot of the time with dehumanizing your patient, it's partly busyness and feeling that it's going to take more time to be polite, which is something I don't believe at all. And it's also partly just having the inclination to remember to do it. And I don't know. There's a certain number of people who get into medicine who I feel are not actually very socially with it to begin with. And they don't exactly learn how to be more better with people by going through medicine at all.
That's a strange thing I've noticed. And again, obviously not a medical student, not in healthcare at all. I mean, married to one, obviously, but I don't know how much overflow I get as a result. But there's this obsession with time. All time has to be used to the maximum efficiency so you can get on to the next patient, do whatever's going on. It's like, blah, blah, blah. It's like, but why are you in a rush? This doesn't take long to begin with.
Because everything eats your time, is why. Time is just this monster that you're fencing with until you die. That's sort of how you view time in medicine.
Very existentialist on you.
Yeah. To transition, I thought William Hurt did an okay job.
Yeah, I'm being a little unfair. He did do an okay job, and it's just kind of like a normal, goofy kind of professional guy. Yeah, I think he actually sold it quite well.
Yeah, this is the kind. William Hurt is one of those actors you need to deploy strategically, because he's very good at playing certain kinds of roles that has otherwise been horribly miscast in just about everything else. So for this film, he's playing a upper middle class professional, which is what he's good at. Whereas in the Sci-Fi Channel series Dune, he was playing Duke Leto Atreides and...
Wait, he what? That, I didn't know that!
That was not a good fit at all.
No, no, that is not a good casting choice.
But as a jokester doctor who comes to personal realizations and reconciles with his wife and so on, he's good. I mean, he's been nominated for awards and stuff. He's not a bad actor. You just need to cast him in the right roles, that's all.
I remember one of the things I was thinking of with the whole jokey mentality. A lot of people suggest that it's a defense mechanism against seeing a vast amount of tragedy in your life as a physician. What do you think of that as an explanation, or do you think it's a valid one?
I think it's probably an explanation. I mean, I don't have a problem with it as an explanation. Yes, you do deal with, I would imagine you guys do deal with a lot of darkness, a lot of tragedy, and if humor is how you cope with it, that's fine. The problem is, I think, when humor starts becoming the scapegoat for leaning into other kinds of behavior and how you treat your patients and how you treat your colleagues that aren't quite nice. It's like, oh, well, I'm just coping through humor. No, you're still being an ass.
Mm-hmm. Yes, the scene where he's talking about the pizza here. Or was it a pizza?
No, you described the scene to me.
Yeah. He was on the car phone.
Yeah?
This is vaguely all I know, is that he was with his wife and they were talking on the car phone and one of his patient's spouses had called.
Oh, yes, I remember. That's right near the beginning of the film. And he's kind of rolling his eyes and
laughing, snickering,
and
trying
along with his wife.
Yeah. which is a scene of, you know, not very professional to let a non-medical spouse to hear, sorry, sweetie, anything to do with a patient. What do you think of the interaction between healthcare providers? Because there is definitely between the, I think he's like an ENT surgeon and the cardiac surgeons, a certain animosity. And I think they have a name for him. What do they call him? The rabbi, I think they call
him. Yeah, he's a Jewish physician, I think is why they call him the rabbi.
Mm-hmm.
And they make jokes about how he has to do tonsil removal.
Yeah,
it's like, oh, well, you know, we're doing these life-saving cardiac operations while this guy is just removing tonsil. It's, yeah, there's very much that kind of internal elitism where they almost think a little more highly of themselves because their specialty is that much more crucial to keeping people alive.
Definitely anyone who has a specialty, if it's ICU or certain eMERGE kind of things, anything where life and death is sort of happens like that. There's a tendency towards a lot of bravado of, look at me saving people immediately! Whereas in, you know, rehabilitation of spasticity, that's not, perhaps not as glamorous. Perhaps not looked at as being as exciting. It's sadly true that the way people think of other specialties or talk down about other specialties. As a student, it tends to be sort of said more euphemistically around me, but I can tell when senior residents and staff physicians are sort of winking, nudging, etc. And I've been privy to it as well. As I become more senior in practice, I'm let in more into that kind of thing. And it's unfortunate because it's supposed to have a bunch of people who work together, but doctors have a huge amount of ego, all of us, myself included, and it clashes.
So. Well, along those lines, too, one thing I noticed is how the second a patient's concern starts kind of even hinting at another discipline, the doctors seem to either not notice at all or to just basically disregard it. There's one part where the main character is doing a follow-up with a patient who'd had, like, it was a mastectomy or something like that. She's a massive scar.
No, she'd had a cardiac surgery. That's what that scar. It's
right.
Sternotomy.
Cardiac surgery. She's got this massive scar down the center of her sternum, and she's trying to explain how, you know, her husband's a good man, they love each other, but it's kind of causing some problems when they're trying to be intimate. And, you know, the doctor, Jack, in his characteristic way, just kind of cracks a joke about it. It's like, that is a fairly big psychological issue for that patient. And not only does he not address it, he doesn't even clue in that there's any reason to have it as an issue.
I think it would be fair for a cardiac surgeon who is interested in cardiac surgery to be fair, to at least just acknowledge and refer to someone who they think might be able to help better. I mean, I think I'd never say that all physicians need to always have to do everything.
No, my point isn't that he should have been able to provide the psychological, psychiatric care. I mean, obviously it's not his specialty, and that is a very specific area of expertise to have, but he should have at least been able to recognize that, okay, I can point you towards some resources who may be able to help you with that.
Yeah. And actually, just to, like, immediately defeat my own argument, is it fair for any time something is at least a bit emotional for doctors to say, oh, I don't do psychiatry, so I don't...
Well, see, that's the other side of things, too. I mean, if you're a surgeon, you're cutting bodies up in the name of saving them, but that's going to have an emotional and mental impact. I think you should be able to address that.
Yeah. And one thing that I will say that I think this movie overdoes a little bit is that among the surgeons that I've been with, they've not been as heartless. They're with their patients. They get that what they do is a big thing for them, for each patient, even though they do it all day. It's their first their patient's usually first encounter with surgery.
Yeah,
and it matters. Yes.
I actually found that the professional manner of the doctors in this movie did tend to be better than what you'll see in a lot of medical dramas on TV that are airing now. Like,
yeah.
It's not like Grey's Anatomy where people are just talking over their patient about their personal lives all the time, as if the patient wasn't there.
I think because this movie is based on the book A Taste of My Own Medicine by somebody.
Loosely based. It even says that at the beginning.
Yeah. I think they made him a cardiac surgeon for a reason. I can't remember if the doctor in that story is actually a cardiac surgeon, but they picked that for a reason. for this film. But I think they were also trying to be as realistic, whereas I think a lot of the things on TV, and the only TV medical TV show I've actually watched in any length is Scrubs. I don't know anything about Grey's Anatomy or Nurse Jackie or any of the other ones, so I can't comment on them. But I would suspect that they're interested in just maintaining viewers who are people who aren't physicians, and they want to hear people dish and gossip.
Well, regular television is about creating tension and drama, and you do that through having these characters have personal lives. I mean, in a hospital drama, unless somebody's dying and they've got to rush in and do their miracle work to save them, you've got to create tension in other ways.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of people would be pretty bored with an actual doctor show, because a lot of actual doctor work is paperwork.
Yeah, they're not all as crazy as House.
Nope. Checking up on lab values and then going, yeah, that's kind of inconclusive. That's what a lot of medicine is. What I thought was interesting in this film was kind of showing how trapped the front-end staff in clinics were with this system, particularly in the radiation therapy lounge, where there was the same administrator. And I think Dr. McKee starts shouting at her because something's... I can't remember. It's going to be later.
No, there were a couple times. There's one time when he had to sign in for something. He had to fill out a form. He gets to the desk for the procedure. He's got to fill out the exact same form. So he's frustrated because he doesn't understand, why am I doing this again? Mm-hmm. There's another time when, you know, the doctor who works in that... the techs who work in there doing the procedure are running late, and he's annoyed again. He's like, why are they late? This is, like, I was told I have to go, you know, every day at this time. Why is this happening?
Yeah. And it's an unfortunate thing for a lot of people where they're caught in the system, and that's, in some ways, I think the exacerbator for the poor behavior patients get is that everyone who is in the system, and this is something I learned from a guy who has a YouTube channel called ZDogMD. He did a TED Med talk about zombie doctors, and how there's this learned sense of powerlessness that you get beginning in medical school, that you can't change anything in medicine by yourself, and so you just shrug, and things continue to be horrible for patients.
I think another good way of looking at that, too, it's like spending any amount of time around a group of children. You'll hear the question, why, so many times. And while it is a fair question, there are some times where the answer is so complex that you can say it's because. Mm-hmm. Right? So I think... It's kind of the similar thing for the healthcare people. Is, I mean, it's why? Everyone's asking you why. Not only are they asking it, many of them are demanding it. Which I think from a patient perspective is a fair thing to want to know. But, I mean, I can certainly understand how hearing that over and over again is quite frustrating.
All right, any last thoughts on the realisticness of this film?
I guess it's worth commenting on that this takes place in the United States. So they're very much concerned about medical insurance.
Yes.
Yes.
And I'd like to say we're not as concerned with being sued as well in Canada, but our culture is becoming more litigious, and that's creeping up here. One thing I thought was great with this film was showing there was actually the realism in the OR itself. It looks very, very like it is. A last thing. What do we think of music choices in the OR? Because this is a frequent debate topic in medicine.
Yes, there are points where you're like, am I watching MASH when you're watching this?
MASH was an awesome show.
It was. The music choices are very similar to what you would hear in MASH.
I don't know. I think it's... I would imagine it's like a career-long debate for some people, but...
Definitely, I like being in an OR where the music is good. I had one preceptor who had excellent musical choices, and it made that OR much nicer. I've been in ORs where the music is terrible. Not rude. I haven't been in an OR where the music has been something that I think a patient wouldn't necessarily object to. I guess except for Guns N' Roses occurred in some ORs, but it's kind of getting to be soft rock at this point, isn't it?
Guns N' Roses are fairly tame for heavy metal, yeah.
But in terms of having songs about, you know, screwing, getting drunk, running around, etc. I mean, the patient is supposedly asleep. So.
I was going to say, a song about getting drunk would just be in bad taste if they're having their liver replaced because of alcohol damage.
Did this movie give anyone any surprises in any way?
I think it went on far longer than I thought it would at the end. I'm not saying that the movie drags on and on. It's just that after he has his surgery. I thought it was going to end and it wasn't going to go into his reconciliation with his wife, but it spends a good 20 minutes on that, I think.
And to be honest, at that point in the film, I thought they were kind of reconciled. And then they did more.
Yeah.
I think the only real surprises for me were when the characters get surprises. There's kind of a little surprise element there, but that's more just effective storytelling than like a big shock for the audience type surprise.
I think everything's telegraphed fairly well, too.
That's the other part of it, too. It's a surprise for the character, so it's surprising for you, but on the other hand, it's like, okay, yeah, I kind of saw that coming, too.
It's kind of clear from the beginning that the rabbi's going to end up doing his throat.
Oh, yeah.
Because even when his colleague says, why don't you go to him? He has the best numbers. It's like, I'm not going to him, because I make fun of him all the time. And that's my favorite scene, is actually in the OR men's locker room there, where he hands the rabbi his chart, and that surgeon looks at it and says, "All right, I'm off tomorrow. We can do it tomorrow," which is cue jumping, by the way.
Yeah.
But anyway, I do love the line. Well, I've always wanted to slit your throat.
Yeah, that was a good line.
You're like, oh, this whole movie worked up to that pun.
It's surgeon humor, I'm guessing.
Yeah, it helps that none of the actors in this film are bad, per se.
Yeah. I found the wife a little bit flat.
Is that acting, though, or is that just the character's writing?
True.
I think that has a lot to do with the focus on the script, in that she's just kind of left out for really big chunks of the film.
I suppose one thing we talked about in first year medicine when we watched this was anyone surprised? I think as a medical class we were somewhat surprised when the lady ear, nose, throat surgeon ended up being an asshole. But I think from the very beginning, Corey, you were like, she is a bitch. It was more or less, I think, what you turned and said to me.
Yeah, probably. It's the doctor Jack is originally going to be treated. Very arrogant, very power trippy. She kind of takes the perspective, and this is the thing that when I encounter it in healthcare really gets me mad. She takes the perspective not that her patient is a person with a problem, but that the patient is the problem.
On the other hand, she is following the kind of rules that Jack sets out when he's talking to, I guess, the residents earlier on in the film.
Yeah.
He's like, don't get emotionally involved. You just go in, fix the problem, get them out as quickly as possible. Then he's treated by a doctor that acts exactly the same way and doesn't...
Yeah, and then he comes to realize why those rules are horrible and he changes them.
I did like the ending where he's like, and you're all going to get some tests, and the barium enema cart kind of rattles by there.
Yeah, the one thing with that lady doctor whose name I forget is that she drops out of the movie immediately after he says, I don't want you as my doctor anymore.
Which is
and
fair.
You never
I
see
think.
Her again or any, get any closure on what exactly was going on between them beforehand.
I mean, there's no foul language in the film, so he basically tells her to F off without using the exact words, and I think that was supposed to be the closure. It's like, you know, you think you're so high and mighty, but one of these days you're going to be a patient going through that same thing.
Yeah.
And she just gets really huffy and walks away because she doesn't want to acknowledge it.
Yeah. How much of her behavior can be that she's a female in medicine? In a surgical role?
Yeah, again, that's absolutely not addressed in the film at all.
I don't know enough about medical culture. I would imagine that, unfortunately, there are a lot of women who feel they need to be aggressive in that setting to assert themselves.
Well, look at how she's introduced in the film. They're talking about her legs from across the hospital.
Yeah.
That's basic, and I mean, the cardiac surgeons are shown in this film to be chauvinistic pigs, basically, from the beginning. But in that culture, how do you think she needs to be just to get respect from her own colleagues, let alone from her patients?
No, fair enough. I think you're right. There is the one scene where they discuss it. I don't know, maybe they could have addressed it a little more, because aside from that one scene, once it's introduced, the whole gender politics of it are pretty much dropped.
Yeah.
So I don't think we actually get enough of it to really be able to say.
It would really, she'd need to be the main character of her own film, because... It's since she's not, they just can't give her the screen time to really discuss more of the issues. But all right, everyone's itching to talk about a certain other character of this film. I'll let you go first, Michael.
Yeah, since this isn't only a medical film, or a doctor film, I should say, it is also a cancer movie, which
yep.
is timely because The Fault in Our Stars is coming out, I think, fairly soon, which is
mm-hmm.
another big cancer movie. They'll
mm-hmm.
obviously be very different from this one. Yeah, we're going to talk about June, otherwise known as Beth for anyone who's read Little Women. And that her sole purpose is to die in part to teach our main character a lesson.
And she's a manic pixie dream girl.
That too. She comes in wearing interesting hats and...
Well, people who do lose their hair to cancer therapy do wear interesting hats
yes.
and wigs, to be fair.
They're acting in flighty ways and generally being flighty in this film.
Yeah.
Well, the thing about June's character is everything about her is very flamboyant. It's very eccentric. I mean, yes, the hats, okay, that's one thing if she's lost her hair, but all of her clothes are crazy.
Mm-hmm.
She's always wearing something quirky or different or weird. She's always going on and on about how much she loves life and all these crazy, amazing, and in some cases, quite unusual experiences she won't be able to have, that she wants to have. And it's like, the entire purpose of this character is to talk about how much she loves life and then die.
Yep.
It's she is, if this had been a romance, she would have been the manic pixie dream girl who married Jack at the end in a bouncy castle. Like,
mm-hmm. yeah.
very annoying character, knowing what a cliche it is.
I found her very irritating,
well,
too. And I will say that when we first saw her in First Year Medicine, we didn't really talk about her much because we were busy talking about Jack. And I think we all kind of found her irritating. I even find the makeup artistry on her annoying. just the way they made her look for this character is like everything is meant to make her doe-eyed and fragile, and yet sort of
proudly loving with this inner strength.
Who lives in a fairly big house, apparently. But,
yeah,
that was weird. And, like, you never find out what her job is. You never find out why she's so weird. Like, I half expected to find out she was, like, some kind of crazy street artist or something.
We find out barely anything about her. And, I mean, Jack does comment on this after she dies. Like, I went to you with all my problems and told you everything about me, but I know you barely anything about you. But that doesn't really address the problem in the script that she has no life outside of interacting with Jack in this screenplay.
Yeah.
Not even a hint of it.
And nobody else lives in this big house with her.
Yeah. The movie also spends a pretty big chunk of time with her, so it's not like there
mm-hmm.
wasn't a running time to accommodate more character development.
Yeah, and when they take off to go see whatever show it is they're going to see,
yeah.
she doesn't say anything like, I'm meeting with my mother tomorrow, or family,
yeah,
anything.
I need to take time off work, just let me phone my boss, or anything like that. They just go...
Well, if you're a stage 4 brain cancer, I doubt you're working.
Okay, but yeah, but anyway, she doesn't contact anyone, it's just, let's go drive in the desert.
It's a very lazily written character. I found it actually quite sexist, because
mm-hmm.
even though they're not dating, even though it's not a romantic interest, this woman only exists to drop everything the male to do what the male character wants to do.
Yeah.
It's like, wow, that's bad.
Yeah, she's just a vehicle for his own reflection constantly.
Yeah. Here's one then. How would that have changed the movie if she only existed in his head?
Then we'd be watching Fight Club.
Another movie that could have only come out in the 90s.
Is there no romantic interest? Because I think they tried to, in the script, insinuate that the wife thought he was cheating, and that just totally flopped because the wife gets no screen time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
They certainly tried to insinuate that his wife thought that and that was causing trouble for him, but it wasn't actually happening anywhere except in his wife's paranoia.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they tried to maybe play with it a bit, but it either didn't work or any suggestion of it came across by accident.
It's also because the conflict with his wife is so slight on that point. Yeah. Has absolutely no consequence.
And rightfully, it is pretty slight, because if you had cancer and your spouse was like, why are you hanging out with this other person who has cancer? You can just say, I have cancer, and this is someone who gets it. And then it's usually like, oh, okay, we kind of the conversation goes.
I think his wife's biggest frustration, though, I mean, yeah, she kind of, it's hinted she suspects they're having an affair, but what really hurts her the most, or the way she describes it, is that he went to somebody who was a complete stranger to unburden himself, but he never even tried talking to her. Mm-hmm. Like, I get it. You try explaining it to your spouse. They don't get it, so you find someone else who will. But, like, you should at least make the effort to talk to your spouse first.
Yeah. It's sort of reflective of that whole when the wife calls Mickey's son to come and say hi, and the son picks up the phone. That's sort of indicative of the relationship that he has with his family of just not being there. Mm-hmm. Which, as a surgeon, is frankly kind of true. You're just not there.
Oh, yeah. It's like, come say hi to your dad. The kid runs over to the phone. His dad's standing right there.
Yeah.
I think just another problem is, though, that June is, has appeared in so many other films already by this point.
Who's the actress?
Sorry, do you mean the actress or
the character type? I don't actually remember who the actress is, but...
Yeah.
That again, this is something that dates back to Little Women and prior, of having that particular character stereotype. And
yeah, any other things you want to get out about June?
Moving on, she's not the only character that exists mostly for the self-reflection of the Doctor, in that there is that Hispanic guy and his family.
Yes.
Yeah, this is a patient he's able to save after having learned his lessons and actually treating said patient as a human being.
Mm-hmm. And also has the most graphic scene in the movie in terms of seeing someone's open chest and the heart beating.
Lub-dub.
I would call it graphic, though, because, I mean, it's weird, because you can have somebody's open chest, you can see their anatomy, like, there can be blood, but if it's in a medical context like that, they're not intentionally making it disturbing.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if this was an action movie, there would have been, like, fountains of blood spewing out, and it would have intentionally been grotesque.
He broke sterile field in that scene. But anyway. Just saying. I suppose the surgery was done by that point.
I guess in this case, that Hispanic character is in it for so little of the film. It's just, he's just a bookend, basically.
Well, and here's the thing, is that you might say that characters are really stereotypical, but I've met patients a lot like that, and I've met their families, and they're a lot like that. I don't think it's that unreasonable to have that family. Particularly, like, when the wife is wondering about, like, the good-hearted thing, as, like, a turn of phrase to do with hers. Like, I've had people ask me kind of weirdish things like that in relation to patients. And you do have to stop yourself from going, no, that's stupid. And actually answering the question that they're really asking.
Which Jack does. So
he does.
This movie's teaching you something, right?
Yeah. Okay. Does anyone have any... I think we've already done some storytelling in terms of our own interaction with healthcare. Anything to do that was similar to this that you think is...
I hinted at it. Like I said, I was at a sports clinic. The doctor was just testing some range of motion things, and he had a medical student there. So what I would think would be the best way to do this is you explain to me as the patient what's happening, and it's the student's responsibility to kind of learn and listen and gain an understanding there. He didn't look at me. First off, at no point did this doctor actually look at my face. He just talked to the student and told her what was happening, and I was expected to figure it out from that. The problem is, it's like, you're using a bunch of medical jargon, like, what is actually wrong with me? That's very frightening to hear.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even if it is just for a minor problem.
That's something that I found a lot in internal medicine, and again, it's not intentional, because there's a lot of bedside teaching there, and they'll find a patient and say, do you mind if we tell these students? And often there's a wall of medical students staring at this patient, who I think feels a little on display while we do this, and then the senior resident or staff will tell us something medical-y in medical terms at us, and it always gets under my skin because I can see the patient wondering what the hell's going on right now.
The other side, I can understand the need for the teaching, and I can understand the value of teaching where you show and explain things to the student, but I think you should probably clear that with the patient first. Like, in my case, it was I walk into the room, he's screwing around on his computer, he's like, oh, this is my medical student, she'll do the first part of the exam. It's like, hi, like, do I have a choice in this matter?
You don't, actually, in a certain degree. This is actually kind of a problem for medical students, is that if you ask, do you mind if a medical student does this, it's pretty frequent people will say no, and then you don't ever get to see patients. So usually the way I'd approach it in clinics is because I tend to get sent in first to say, hi, my name's Marie, I'm the medical student working with X, whoever it is I'm with that day. I'll be talking to you first, and then the doctor will come in, and we'll all figure out what we're going to do today. Mm-hmm. Then I usually go with, how does that sound? And only once have I had somebody say, no, I do not see medical students. Because most of the time they kind of go, oh, okay.
I do see the merit in that argument,
yeah.
But like, you're at least making the effort to,
mm-hmm.
to kind of put them at ease.
Yeah.
Favorite parts of this film?
I don't know. Like, I wouldn't say I disliked it particularly. It's just there wasn't anything... I can't really think of any moment that really just gripped me and made me go, okay, that was really cool.
I like the throat-slitting comment.
Okay, the
throat-slitting
joke would probably... Yeah, okay.
I rewatched that scene over and over again.
Scratch what I just said. The throat-slitting joke was funny.
Yeah,
it's a fairly engaging film in that there's no point where it's like, I don't want to watch this anymore. But
yeah,
it's kind of hard to
like,
pick out scenes for me where I go, that was brilliant. I mean, there are lines that I liked with a certain amount of the humor, but there's also much that sticks directly in my head. That was excellent, excellent screenwriting.
Yeah, I think the best way to describe it, it's a very adequate movie.
Yeah.
Like, it's not brilliant, it's not terrible, it's not, it just kind of putters along and it's watchable.
Do you think it's a good idea that they make medical students watch this?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. It has an actual point to it, which helps. I mean, I'd rather they watch this than Patch Adams, so...
Always insightful, Mike. Thanks. Least favorite parts of this film.
June.
Yeah, June. it wouldn't be hard to make her a better character.
The wife, she was also annoying.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to think, like, are there any female characters in this movie who aren't annoying or overtly bitchy? And the only ones that come to mind are the receptionists and the nurses.
Yeah, the one,
and they get
one that sings.
And they have very little dialogue.
Yeah.
The singing, the singing person.
Scrub.
Whose name I forget.
The singing scrub nurse. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, guys, thanks for watching this film, because I told you to, because I wanted to mention it. I think it's one of the few films that's kind of sort of medically relevant in this way, because I can't really think of a lot of other medical movies that kind of do this realism doctor-patient thing.
Yeah, there's
although apparently
very few movies that focus on this particular aspect of what it is to be a
doctor. And there might be a reason for that, because... There's the doctor.
Because otherwise, you'll get a perfectly adequate movie.
Yes. Anyway, yeah, thanks. And thank you all out there who have actually listened to this. I'm Marie Gojmarek.
Michael.
And Corey.
This has been Yatropix. Okay. Oh man, I just had a thought there. We were just talking about
time.
Just prior to time. Yeah, thanks. Time, but no time lords. Different doctor.
Yes. We'll get into.
We're talking about her later.
Oh, okay.
I have that whole thing specifically in its own part of this podcast.
Okay.
Otherwise, it's going to creep in everywhere.
Okay. No, fair enough.